Hello and welcome to episode 56 of Popcorn Optional, a weekly movie podcast where we talk all things movies. And this week we're reviewing the Too Many Years Too Late sequel, The Incredibles 2, which is a lot of twos in there, but we're getting technical in this episode.
I mean, this is Popcorn Optional 2. We only do sequels.
That's yes, true. We only do sequels. As you can see by Ocean's 8, this, next week's Jurassic World 2, Sicario 2, Ant-Man 2. Gosh, well, there's a lot
we
of
did Solo a few weeks ago also, kind of a sequel, prequel.
Yeah, but that's kind of like Solo 5. You count the originals, Force Awakens, Murdered, and then, you know, prequel. We got a new segment we're going to get to. Our review of Incredibles 2, and then we'll end with our content of the week. My name is Cameron Salina, and as always, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Jake Brown and Trevor Allison.
What's up?
It's good to be here.
Good to have everybody together. So let's get to our new segment. There is no news or trailers worth talking about. There was Dumbo, but it is what it is. So,
it's Dumbo.
Yeah. So we're going to do a new segment. And this segment is movie hot takes, or as we like to call it, burnt celluloid film. So here's what we're going to do. We're each going to give two hot takes on movies, movie culture, actors, awards, something involving movies. And then we're going to talk about these hot takes, how hot they are, and then we're going to rank who had the hottest take on this episode. So for those of you who don't know, a hot take is something that tends to go against what popular culture believes. It's sometimes like hyperbolic to the extent of there's no way that could be true. They're often like shallow. There's no depth to them. It's kind of like just like a sentence, like a quick thought that kind of goes against things. So like, for example, a hot take would be Avatar is the most important film this century so far. Clearly, even though I like Avatar, clearly that goes against what popular people would say is the best.
Are we popular people?
Popular people. Yeah, we're the cool kids. We're sitting at the cool table. Yeah. We do cool kids things. We wear YouTuber
we have a podcast,
merch.
So. You know,
yeah,
we're legit.
Yeah, we're big deals.
So basically a hot take is anything you would find on sports talk radio.
Yes.
Yes.
If Stephen A. Smith would say it, it's probably a hot take.
Sports talk
James
radio.
James Cameron has directed some of the worst films in the history of cinema.
Look.
My good friend, Steven Spielberg.
Look, I don't care if Steven Spielberg's one of the greatest directors of all time. You do not let him direct a modern adaptation.
Oh man. Sports while we're on this, I will say sports talk radio is the worst medium of communication that exists.
Yeah.
The single worst.
Yep. Yes.
And I include like the ESPN crap like First Take in with that. It's all the same.
Colin Cowherd just talking to himself for hours. Yeah.
That's my favorite part about Colin Cowherd is the fact that it's just him. Like, if this podcast was just me saying things, like, guys, I got some hot takes for you today. I'm just going to say them to myself.
Like, 25% of them are vaguely racist. You're like, okay, then, maybe he needs someone else to kind of counterbalance this.
And then another 25% of the episode is just dead space as he, like, lets a thought simmer.
Like, as he lets his points land.
Look, I don't think LeBron James should be on the Cavaliers. Okay, let's get into our next one.
Oh man, if you, dear listener, have no idea what you're talking, what we're talking about, then you're better off.
Yeah, I wish there was a quick video I could point you to that would be like the best of sports broadcasting. But
just Google that, and it'll probably be entertaining.
All righty, so let's get into these hot takes. Let's do a round. So let's do one each, and then we'll go to round two.
Do we actually have to believe these?
I would say that would go in credence. You should believe.
It's an exaggeration of what you think, which my wife would say, this is how I talk in everyday life.
Hey-o. So there's like a little nugget of what you believe in there, but
yes.
To the
it
extreme.
May not be 100% true. You may have exaggerated it, but it's somewhat true.
Okay. Yeah, I just want to make sure that I want to make sure I'm on the along the right lines. Okay. So here's my first hot take is that Chris Pratt isn't actually a good actor. He plays Andy Dwyer and he plays Burt Macklin, and that's the only two characters he ever plays.
You know, there might be a truth there.
I think there's truth to it. How hot it is another question.
He's got charisma, but...
Oh, dude's charismatic AF.
But like, not actually a good oozing. Actor.
But I think Chris Pratt's like a modern Will Smith. Like, he's entertaining. I enjoy seeing him on screen. Do I ever think that he's going to win an Academy Award? No. I don't know. That's a... on a scale of 1 to 10, if we do this on a scale of 1 to 10, I would give that like a... I'd give that like a 4.
On hotness?
Are we rating each other's hot takes?
Yeah. Well,
how caliente is that take?
Yes, on a Scoville level. Is that a jalapeno? Is that a ghost pepper? Is it a habanero?
Okay, I'm down with this.
Okay, let's use the Scoville scale. What kind of pepper is that? Is that hot take?
Welcome to Hot Ones.
Welcome to Hot Ones. If only we could get their talent that they got.
That's already a thing. Whoops.
Yeah.
Dang it.
Okay. Am I going now? Sorry, Trevor, you're not hot. Hot or not? Trevor's not hot.
Not
oh,
hot.
Man. I thought that was going to be a little more controversial. I need to step up my game.
You got to know your audience.
Yeah.
You're talking to us.
BRB, I'm checking the Skip Bayless Twitter feed.
Skip Bayless, the worst hot taker of all time. Also, okay, never mind.
Am I up?
Yes.
Okay. Hot take. The Jurassic Park series is terrible.
Whoa.
Listen, I almost...
The series as a whole?
The series as a whole is terrible.
Yeah, I don't think that's very hot either, because I think the first movie is great, and I love the second movie, but it's not good, but the rest are garbage.
But, like, your initial reaction to what I just said was like, whoa. See,
yeah.
Pretty hot.
See,
it's hot on the front, and then it, like, simmers down to, like, a nice mm-hmm. Chipotle aioli.
Yeah. I could not have described that take better myself in terms of peppers. That's perfect.
Yeah.
So
I'd give that a habanero.
Thank you.
If I hadn't just watched Jurassic World for the first time last week, I would have been a little more taken aback by it. But that's one of the worst movies I've ever seen.
Oh gosh.
It's just a steaming pile of awful garbage. It's not even like
you
they
didn't
spent
enjoy any part
million
of it?
Dollars on it and it's lit poorly. Like, come on.
Yeah,
I can't.
Jake, so that's spicy. I feel like there's a lot of truth to it. I will give my first one. Adam Sandler is a top 10 actor when he wants to be.
Oh, that's interesting.
It's hot.
It is pretty hot. It seems that he's, I think it's pretty hot because I think the when he wants to be should instead be when he works with a great director.
When he wants to be, when he doesn't want to take a vacation and make a movie, but he instead decides to actually work with a talented director, he's a top 10 actor in Hollywood. If he would not make the bro travel movies with... where he woos some hot celebrity actress, he would be like, if he did Paul Thomas Anderson films, or he did Noah Baumbach films, like the Meyerowitz stories, he is a top 10 actor day in and day out.
I'll agree with you on that. That's kind of like Jurassic Park comment of just like, oh, wait, hold on. And then you think about it and you're like, yeah, you know, that's got a nice aftertaste.
That's still a habanero plus for me. That's a little hot.
Okay.
Little hot.
So right. we're in the 130,000 Scoville range. It's spicy. You're feeling it, but it's not ghost pepper.
I'm going to pull up the Scoville scale. I need a bigger point of reference.
So for people who don't know, the Scoville scale is how you rank the hotness of peppers, hot sauces, whatever it is. The hottest pepper in the world is Pepper X, I believe, and I think it's like 3 million Scoville. To put that into perspective, a habanero, which is pretty spicy, is 130,000 Scoville. Jalapeno is anywhere between 2 to 5,000 Scoville. So there's kind of a ranking in there, however you want to do it.
Trevor,
bring us back to rank number two.
This is just something that came to me as I was pondering this, and it's a crazy throwback. And this is that Steven Seagal was a better action hero than Chuck Norris.
I don't.
That's another one of those that, like, at first you're just like, no. And then you think about it and you're like, yeah. Chuck Norris kind of sucks.
Guys, we're not offensive enough to be good at this game.
I think the cultural relevance of that stops it from being hotter. Like, there's... It's just not, like, I couldn't name you a Chuck Norris or a Steven Seagal film off the top of my head. So it's kind of one of those things where I'm just like...
Under Siege, are you kidding me? That's classic.
Okay, there you go.
Total classic.
Okay, so I...
Okay, so I do want to use this opportunity to... So Steven Seagal is still in, like, 3 or 4 movies every year. I'm going to list, you know, just a few from the past 10 years. These are their titles. General Commander, Attrition, Mercenary Absolution, Cartels, Contract to Kill, End of a Gun, The Perfect Weapon, The Asian Connection, Code of Honor, Sniper, Special Ops, A Good Man, Force of Execution, True Justice, okay. Maximum Conviction.
All right. We got
it. It's the same title for every movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a jalapeno for me. It's not that spicy.
I'll give it a cayenne, a little bit above jalapeno, but not too much. We're still in the yellow range now.
Okay. So Jake, give us your second hot take.
Okay. I got two options. I'm trying to figure out how hot do I want to be.
Be as hot as you can be. I want, like, controversy. I want, like,
okay. All right.
Yeah, I want burn this place down.
Up is maybe Pixar's worst movie besides the first 10 minutes.
Besides what?
The first 10 minutes. Up. After the first 10 minutes, Up is maybe Pixar's worst movie.
Oh. That's hot. Ooh. Okay.
That's pretty
spicy.
Again, you're... Oh, man. I just don't... I have not seen The Good Dinosaur or Cars 2 and 3. Although, I'm like, the more I'm thinking about this, besides the first 10 minutes of Up, it's like pretty casual Disney animated fare.
It's so forgettable. And like,
that, like,
so
Bolt,
boring.
Brother Bear,
I'm gonna,
kind of vain.
I'm going to give that a... I'm going to give that a Carolina Reaper at 1.5 million
oh, wow.
Scoville. Because
That's top of the scale.
Because that's... Okay, so if you were to ask a panel of 50 movie critics to list the top 5 best Pixar films, I guarantee you Up would be on most of those.
Yeah, and, which I don't understand.
Okay, I'll say it. I love Up. I think it's fantastic. I think when we did our rankings of Pixar, it was in my top 5, but... I perfectly understand that hot take and the reasoning behind that. And I think it's a very like accurate and well done hot take. So it's a Carolina Reaper for me.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you.
That's
so happy to make your butt burn.
This is getting weird.
That's a cayenne and that I don't necessarily agree with it and think it's probably wrong, but I could maybe see someone thinking that.
Mm. Well, you know, that averages out to a Naga Viper, so I'll take it. Because that sounds awesome.
Okay, so... okay, this is going to pain me to say it, but there's part of me that believes it. And so I'm gonna put it out there. Steven Spielberg hasn't made a great film since 1998 when he made Saving Private Ryan.
That's only a little hot because of Minority Report.
Catch Me If You Can. Munich.
Fun.
Lincoln?
I haven't seen Munich.
Oh, I forgot Trevor Hates.
Oh, Lincoln is terrible.
Lincoln is a great play.
Man, I thought that was going to be real spicy.
No, I'm going through his IMDb. God, he's made a movie like every year.
The best Lincoln play of all time was done by Gabe. And season 8 of The Office.
Well, yes, that's true. Lincoln is the strange film that has a transcendent acting performance while not being that interesting as a film.
Oh man, but that's you could say that about any Daniel Day-Lewis film, really.
Yeah, and somewhat. I don't think this is that hot. I was telling Sarah the other day. I was like, After I watched Jurassic World, it got me on the Spielberg kick, kind of looking back into some other things. And I was just like, you know what? He really hasn't made a great movie in 15 years.
Yeah.
I think Minority Report is great.
Yeah, I would say Minority Report's the last great film he made. But since then, they have all been good, but nothing Spielbergian.
Except for right. Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, which is awful.
I really yes. want to watch Kingdom of the Crystal Skull again, simply for the fact of I want to know how bad... Like, I don't think I've seen it since it came out when we were in high school.
I watched it for the first time last year, and it was awful. So... Jeez. I don't know if that helps, but
okay, so we have a couple different hot takes. Let's see what's the hottest, like let's give our opinion on what's the hottest take, not being able to vote for your own. So I'm gonna run through them really quick. Chris Pratt is not a good actor. Jurassic Park series is terrible. Adam Sandler is a top 10 Hollywood actor when he wants to be. Steven Seagal is a better action star than Chuck Norris. Up may be the worst Pixar film, except for the first 10 minutes. And Steven Spielberg hasn't made a great film since 1998. So what are you guys not voting for your own? What do you guys think the hottest take is from tonight?
I think it's Jake's take on Up is the hottest take.
I would second that, Trevor, and say that I think that's the hottest take of the night.
Well, then it doesn't even matter what I say because I'm the hottest.
But just out of curiosity, just for boasting purposes.
That was me touching my nipple with my wet finger.
Ew, this is getting odd tonight.
I liked Cameron's perspective of like asking film critics or like a panel of like 50 people. And I think out of all of those, the one that would get the strongest reaction is that Chris Pratt is not a good actor.
The interesting thing that's risen out of this now is like, I would legitimately love to pose that to people because I don't know. I feel like Chris Pratt's so charismatic and likable that nobody, even if they didn't really like him, would really say anything bad about him.
That's the thing, though. He's like vanilla pudding. Nobody really loves vanilla pudding, but it's like, it's nice.
But you would never say anything bad about vanilla pudding. Like, you're not going to go out of your way to make vanilla pudding, to put down vanilla pudding because it had a bad run or something.
Yeah.
I would love to see what Chris Pratt could do with... Like an actual, I was going to say with a talented director, but James Gunn's incredible. I don't know. I would love to see what he could do in something more serious.
Well, he was in Passengers, and that was like...
That doesn't count. That's Jennifer Lawrence in it.
Why does that not count?
Okay, hot take. Jennifer Lawrence is the most overrated actress of all time.
I agree. I don't.
She's on a steady decline.
Yeah.
She was so great in Winter's Bone.
She's running on stinkers.
Has she done anything since Mother?
Red Sparrow.
Red Sparrow.
Oh, yeah.
She's great. I think she's great in Winter's Bone. She's great in Silver Linings Playbook. And she's great in American Hustle.
Yeah,
and
I would agree with all
everything
that.
Else, she's very meh.
There's a movie early on in her career that she was in that was pretty great. Like Crazy with Anton Yelchin. And Felicity Jones.
Oh yeah, she's not really too much in that movie.
No, but she
but it is a great. That's a
yeah,
yeah. That's a gut punch movie.
Yeah,
good
that's
Lord.
A movie that'll make you feel way too many bad things. So, all right, well that's hot takes or burnt celluloid film as we will
hot
be
takes.
Calling. Hot takes.
Hot takes is better.
Okay, we'll go with hot takes. That was hot takes. We'll be back with another edition of hot takes sometime soon, but. Congratulations to Jake for saying that Up may be the worst Pixar film outside of the first 10 minutes.
Well, thank you.
Transitioning from one Pixar film to another, let's go ahead and get into our review of The Incredibles 2, which came out this past weekend, and apparently just blew up in theaters because the highest grossing animated movie of all time on opening weekend was Finding Dory. And that had grossed 130 million, not 130,000. That'd be crazy. So Finding Dory at 135 million. This movie made $183 million opening weekend, almost $50 million over Finding Dory. That's incredible to me. It was the eighth highest opening domestically of all time. The original Incredibles only made $262 million domestically. So I feel pretty good for picking this in our summer movie wager bet. But
yeah.
Let's go ahead.
We need an update on that soon, by the way.
Yeah, I'm going to put something together. We'll have that, you know, to hype our next episode. I'll have that in our next episode. Spoiler, though, Trevor is by far in the lead because he picked the Avengers. And that was
unfair. $2 billion.
But
I know that's international.
Trevor also picked Christopher Robin and Mission Impossible. So it could get interesting.
Christopher Robin is looking better by the minute.
Just because a movie looks good doesn't mean it's going to make a lot of money. Those are two different things.
That's true.
We've already kind of talked and given general thoughts on The Incredibles. We all love it. It's all one of our favorite Pixar films. If you want to hear more about that, you can go find it on episode 8 of this podcast. We did a ranking of all of our Pixar episodes. So listen to that and find out where Incredibles ranked in all of our top 10s and in our top 10 as a whole for the podcast. But I mean, it's fair to say that we all love that movie, right? The original Incredibles, it's all one of our top Pixar movies.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I rewatched it last week and it wasn't quite as good as I remembered.
Ooh.
But it is very good. I was actually disappointed in the animation more than anything else.
Hmm.
It didn't look great. Even compared to some earlier Pixar films, which kind of surprised me.
Which I think if anything goes to show how much animation and technology has advanced in the past 14 years. You know, The Incredibles came out in 2004. It was the fifth, 6th. I think it was the 6th Pixar film that had ever come out.
Wasn't it their first like mostly people film though?
I think so, because before that they had obviously Toy Story, Bug's Life. I think Monsters Inc. and Finding Nemo came out before that.
Toy Story 2.
Also. I mean, yeah. I think it's their 6th film. I'm not 100% sure on that. I used to be able to recite all the Pixar films by when they came out in their year.
I think it was their first one, like completely set in a human universe.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that makes the animation, like our eye is trained for that. So.
Yeah. 6th film came out in 2004. Yeah. And before all the films that we had talked about. And then they followed it up with Cars. So,
heyo.
Yeah. Way to go, John Lasseter.
Better than Up.
You think Cars is better than Up?
Eh. If someone was like, would you rather watch Cars or Up the whole thing? I'd be like, probably Cars.
But
if they're like,
would you
rather
watch
the first 10 minutes of a movie, then Up, sure. Yeah.
That take is getting hotter and hotter by the minute. Jeez. Especially when you watch Cars 2 or Brave.
We're not talking about those.
Before we get to our review of The Incredibles 2, though, we have to review a little short film that played before The Incredibles 2. What did you guys think about this short film that played in front of it? What was Bao Bun?
Bao?
I think it's Bao.
Bao?
Bao? Boy?
Yeah.
B-A-O, I think it's pronounced Bao. Yeah, Bao.
Okay.
What did you guys think of Bao?
I thought it was a delight. It was a little bizarre to begin with, and I wasn't really sure where it was headed and where it was going and what was happening. But by the end, it really hit me deep down inside in my heart, and I enjoyed it. It was very touching and sweet.
All right. So I get it, but I didn't really like it. And this is the first time this has happened with a Pixar short film. So I feel really weird and that it just didn't feel right to me. Maybe it was the lack of sound design or something. Like there was sound design until there wasn't, and then there was again. And then it was just a little weird. It's just a little weird. I understand what it's saying, and I appreciate the message. And I've only had like 20 hours to process it, so I'll take that with a grain of salt. But at least it wasn't all Olaf's frozen bullcrap adventure thing. So
in front of Coco, yeah,
yeah. So I mean, I can't complain that much.
Yeah, that was rough, but I think I'm with Jake on this one. It was something that like I watched and I was like, that was fun. But afterwards, there was nothing about it that I was... Like, I remember when the first time I watched Piper or Lou or La Luna. All of those films, like it was almost distracting for the first 5 minutes of whatever movie they were leading into, because those films, those short films were so good that it made me wish that there was more of that, to where this was kind of like a, almost just like a palate cleanser before The Incredibles. Like it, you have the trailers and then this played and you're like, okay, now I'm in the mood for The Incredibles. And I didn't think about it again. I even forgot to put it in our show notes because I was just kind of like, that was fine. There was nothing about it, though, that was, like, incredible.
It was very, very forgettable.
Yeah. Which is...
Yeah. It doesn't have... Like, I remember when I... Watching Inside Out with the lava one before.
Yeah.
Like, the song was, like, playing in my head the whole time I was watching Inside Out.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I don't think it's on the top level of the Pixar shorts. But I thought it was delightful.
Yeah, I think there's a heartfelt element to it. You know, if I was to put this up against other short films that had come out that were animated over the past couple months that I had seen, this would be the top of the list. But there's still something missing from it. Like, it doesn't have that Pixar charm that you're used to from these type of short films that just kind of... Especially for the subject matter. Like, when you look at a purely, like, written down what is the story level, I don't think that this carries the emotional weight that it should. Like, when that reveal happens at the end of it, of what's actually going on, it didn't hit me as hard as like a twist like that should.
Yeah, I'm with you, Cameron. I liked it. It was fine. I think a lot of it had to do with the sound. Like, it didn't feel full, which I understand it's a short film. And I've made a lot of short films where it's like, oh, do I want to do sound design or diegetic sound or hire a sound guy? Nope. No, we're just going to do music. That's fine. And the video always suffers from it. Like, and I think that you have this like long montage in the middle of this film with like basically no sound design until the director was like, but what if there was a soccer ball sound here?
Right.
And nothing else. And it's just kind of like, this feels half finished.
Right.
I think that was my big thing.
I think it would have been better if it had been a silent film.
Yeah. Like, just commit to either one.
The only sound that really rings in my head is the sound of the mom crying when the Bao Bun ends up, like, leaving and she's just, like, on the ground crying. And that, it just felt forced to me instead of feeling like a natural. It's almost like in The Shining, not The Shining, American Psycho. That's a weird comparison. I get it. But when people walked out of American Psycho and they act like there were people outside the theater asking, what color was the blood in the shower scene? And they would say red, yet it was a black and white film. It's almost like we know the sound of someone crying. And I think it'd be more powerful if we didn't have the actual sound of it there, but we were able to like, input our own perception of what that sound should be on the scene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I was like half making my own decisions, but also like then being like, oh, wait, no, there's sound here.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wait, now the sound's gone. I was like coming in and out of my own perception of sound, which was weird. But yeah.
Yeah, it's a weird... It's hard because I always want to love everything that Pixar does. Like, I feel like they've done so many good things that I'm won over just by the name Pixar. Like, you put the name Pixar on almost anything, and I'm like, yay, what is it? I don't even know. Like, Pixar itself is an honorable mention. But this short just kind of fell flat. And I, not to give away too much for the review, but that's almost an indicator in the movie going forward of how I felt about everything else in the movie. So let's go ahead and get to our review of The Incredibles 2. I can go ahead because I feel like I'm probably gonna be the only one saying this and I feel weird about saying it, but this movie just kind of fell flat for me. There was nothing about it that stuck out as amazing or, to use a pun, incredible. it was just kind of like, we had to get out of the way. We had to get out of the way. Let's move on now. I feel terrible about it. I feel sick to my stomach. I'm going to go get sick after this podcast is done. there was nothing about it, though, that was like when you watch the first one, you're enthralled from beginning to end. And I feel there was most of the movie in this part where I was like, there were parts of the movie that were way more interesting than other parts of the movie. And it ultimately left me wanting different things from this movie. Like, the parts of this that worked good were really, really good. And the parts of this that didn't were really boring and just kind of slogged along. So tell me I'm wrong. Jake, what were your general thoughts?
General thoughts. Like, The Incredibles is one of my favorite Pixar movies, and one that I think gets a little lost in the depths of the Pixar filmography. I've always been frustrated that the sequel took this long to make, like I'm sure everybody else has. And you know, while I do have some complaints that I think will match with what you're going to say, Cameron, I think overall the movie was a lot of fun, a lot of lighthearted, family-friendly fun. It did leave me wanting more. And, you know, I guess that's a good thing as long as they make another one within like the next 2 or 3 years. I think what's sad is it didn't quite live up to the 14-year-long wait/hype train. Like, 14 years is such a long time for people to build up expectations, which is what happened with Star Wars. And while this movie is really good, for me, I think it's really good. The plot feels super familiar, which we'll talk about later. But like, overall, I really, really liked this movie, and I'm excited to talk more about it and hopefully get some more Incredibles in the near future. So overall, for me, it was really enjoyable. I think it's one of those movies that anybody can go to and have fun watching, which during the summer, from Pixar, that's what you want. Right. So for me, it was great. Trevor.
Yeah, I thought it was really good. I thought it was really fun. I thought it was really pretty. I think the animation is great. I love the art direction and how everything is designed. The aesthetic is fantastic. Kind of basing it in that 1940s, 50s golden age of comic books, but bringing in some of that like hyper modern technology is really interesting. I do think that the plot starts out going in an interesting direction and then becomes very predictable and pedantic. And it just feels like something we've seen before. I think that the issue with this is that it maybe sacrifices quality of plot for simplicity of plot. And I don't really like that, especially from my Pixar films.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think this was a good movie. I think it was fun. It was enjoyable. I kind of disagree with you, Cam. I think the pacing is really solid on this, and I felt like it flew by. And I was just kind of in it the whole time and didn't ever feel like I was getting slogged through or anything.
Yeah, I think part of that comes from the fact that this movie just feels so predictable and dated, because a lot of what this movie deals with is almost like Civil War-esque from the Marvel Universe.
Uh-huh.
And I feel like Disney actually almost like this movie just kind of feels late. Like if this had come out in like 2010, 6 years after the original. 2010, you've had Iron Man, Incredible Hulk, and I think Iron Man 2 came out in 2010. This movie feels a lot more relevant, a lot better. But part of it is that this movie feels so predictable because of the landscape of modern superhero films as we see it today. You know, we're so saturated with the Marvel films, the DC, the Fox, I mean, even non-superhero films like Venom, or even Mission Impossible feels like a response to, or Fast and the Furious is like a superhero film.
This film, I think, owes a lot more to the James Bond Mission Impossible style of film than a comic book film.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're superheroes and it has kind of a comic book aesthetic, but the plot lines and the actions, and I mean, I think there's some clear similarities here between some of the work that Brad Bird did in Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol. I think there's definitely an influence on this, which is fine, not a problem. But yeah, I think that thinking of it now as a superhero film is kind of interesting. You know, when the first one came out, the two best superhero films were Spider-Man 2 and the original Batman. And since then, we've gotten this slew of great films who kind of fall into this genre. And this, yeah, I didn't feel like as I was watching it, but thinking back, it almost feels like out of time. Like if you think of it as like, this is like a great story from the 1960s right. or something. That kind of thing. But this genre and this type of story is told in a much different way now.
Right. And that's not to take away from, like, Trevor, you mentioned the art direction, like the art deco design of all the characters with these solid straight lines and the colors that they chose is absolutely beautiful. I mean, any single frame in this movie could be pulled out and you could use it in like a concept art book for The Incredibles 2 and it would look beautiful. Like every single scene in this movie just looks great. But I think ultimately the predictability and the where we're at in the superhero genre left me wanting more in this. And not to show my cards too much, but you know what I feel this film doesn't even recognize is, and I wrestled with this in writing down thoughts, is Jack-Jack is by far, in my opinion, the best part of this movie.
I completely agree. He steals the whole thing.
And so then I go to the Troy community season finale idea of, is too much of a good thing a bad thing? Like, how much could you really lean into that Jack-Jack idea before it just gets overused? Like, is he used the right amount? I like the idea of using Elastigirl as the main character, and this is almost her story. But I think when you veer too far away from like the Elastigirl plotline or the Jack-Jack plotline, there's some middle areas in there that just kind of feel boring and predictable. I mean, even parts of the Elastigirl story that I wish they would have snipped a little bit for time just to kind of move things along. So let's go ahead and get into spoilers, though, because I feel like we're starting to get into a territory where I still want people to see this movie. I think it's definitely worth seeing, but I want to talk more in depth about some of the behind the scenes stuff that isn't revealed in the trailer. So if you haven't seen The Incredibles 2 yet, contrary to what I've said, it's a good film that is very enjoyable and probably better than most of the films that Pixar has put out over the past 3 years. So Incredibles 2 is out now. Go see it. Let's go ahead and hop into spoilers, though. So what did you guys think of how each of the members of the Parr family were used in this film? From Elastigirl to Mr. Incredible to Jack-Jack to Dash and Violet.
I agree with you guys that Jack-Jack was a little overused, but my theater ate it up. I enjoyed it every time he was on screen. And you know, every other character.
I can speak to having a baby at home that he looked pretty authentically like a baby.
Yeah, I was actually, he reminded me of Ollie, Cam. Just like the noises and the interactions and stuff. It was making me laugh.
Yeah. I think with ginger hair and blue eyes, it's hard for me. I agree with you. I'm like, that's Ollie. That's my son.
Yeah. But like overall, it's kind of like par for the course here. Haha, because their last name is Parr.
Well done.
But yeah. every character here plays their part in good ways and bad. I loved getting to see more of Elastigirl. I thought that like they used that character in such a really cool way, which we can talk more about later. But, you know, overall, like, all the characters played their part. What I loved about the first film compared to this film is that the first film was about the story of the family. Mm-hmm. And this film is about the story of Elastigirl and the story of Violet and the story of Dash and the story of Bob wanting to get his glory days back. And then the story of politicians and laws. And it's not just solely about the story of the family. And I think that's felt in each of the characters. Like, you can almost feel the characters, even though they're animated, you can like feel in the performance in a way that they're like aware of the limited screen time and right. They're trying to make the most of it. Like, which just sounds super weird to say for an animated film. But I felt like that was happening because they weren't getting a lot of time to breathe together as a unit. So, yeah.
My least favorite part of this film is how much time Elastigirl spends away from the family. And that's kind of what you kind of getting to what you were talking about, Jake. I think that you don't have to tell, you don't have to do that to tell this story. And so that's why it's a little bit frustrating. My other least favorite part is that the villain, who was very interesting initially to me, turned out to be not interesting whatsoever.
Yeah.
Do you feel like the reveal of who the villain is and the predictability of it made that not as interesting?
Yeah, she really talked herself into it, or talked me into it. The character did, Deaver or whatever, Evelyn Deaver. I didn't suspect that at all at first. I was like, well, this is interesting. But then the more and more, like, she was in a scene and talking about their philosophy and everything, I was just like, oh, yeah, that's her. She's the screen slaver.
Well, so what's weird for me with this movie is that it's calling back the original film, which came out 14 years ago, but in the story structure of this happened like a week ago.
Right. Immediately. I think it's 3 months. I read that somewhere, but yeah.
I think so, it's immediately, like, because it's like you pick up with the coal miner or the underminer.
Well, okay, rather, I guess that's the coal miner. The underminer thing is 3 months after the climax.
Okay. I get what you're saying.
Of the first film. Right. Like, sorry.
Overall, I appreciate the callbacks, and it was interesting to see how like a different hero would act in similar situations. But it was like, guys, we just did this,
right? So you're saying that part of it felt like a retread of something that we've already been through.
Yeah, and you know, it's like I said, I mean, like with the train, for example, it's interesting to see how a different hero would act in a similar situation, like especially one that you would assume wouldn't be able to stop a runaway train. And that's like a big deal, is that like she stops a train, whereas Mr. Incredible got sued for stopping a train. And when you think about abilities, no offense, Elastigirl, I love what they did with her in this movie, but you don't think of elasticity as one of the top of the list of being able to stop a train. I love what they did in showing like what she can do, and she's awesome. But like, it left me disappointed because so much of this film was the same. And considering it takes place so close with all the crap they just went through with Syndrome, you think they'd be a little bit more hesitant to immediately start working with a rich inventor again. Like the moment that they were like, DevTech, I was like, well, that's the bad guy. Like that's going to be some way attached to the bad guy.
Right.
And it's almost like the filmmakers forgot that even though there was this 14-year gap, it, like the film in terms of like the actual narrative chronologically is so immediately after what just happened.
Yeah. I also, another thing that clued me in was that I just can't trust Bob Odenkirk's voice. You know, like after watching Breaking Bad, who knows if he's telling the truth or not.
But he was completely free. Yeah. He was the good sibling.
I know, but it just kind of signaled me to be on high alert. As soon as they started meeting with DevTech, I was like, something's not right here.
Right.
Something is not right.
But it's almost like that's expected. There's nothing else introduced. And so it's, okay, the bad guys obviously, unless they're going to pull Syndrome out of thin air and be like, wow, he's the screen slaver too? It has to be one of them. Like, there is no other option for it.
This is a common issue in kids' films, I think, where you have kids' films that have a villain, is that you go one of two ways. Someone who's just evil completely for the sake of being evil with no context, or someone who's evil because they're so closely connected to our hero.
Right.
And I think that this obviously went the one way, but finding the something that's not those two is much more difficult, I will grant you, but makes for a better story.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of why this really is kind of a bizarrely small story when you think of the whole scope of it. And it also, the stakes are really not very high, because superheroes are already illegal. If the villain gets her way, they're just going to stay illegal. I mean, I know a few people are dying here and there, and the boat's pointed at the city, which...
How much would a boat... That was my thought at the end. It's like, did they ever say anything about, like, there's a hydrogen bomb on the boat? Or, like, Was there ever?
I mean, I think it would be pretty bad. But the thing about that being part of the stakes is that you don't even know about that until there's 10 minutes left in the movie.
Right.
They're just nothing feels incredibly, incredibly heavy. And the first movie, the stakes aren't super heavy, except that it's so insular because it's about the family and the stakes are the family. But in this, the stakes are the status quo, mm-hmm. I guess.
Yeah, so Trevor, you bring up an interesting point just in how I feel like the common complaint with superhero movies nowadays is that everything's so, like, the scale of the movie is always, we have to save the world, we have to save the world. If we don't do this, the world's gonna end. And this, in some ways, feels like a response to that in keeping it small. But then in other ways, feels like it completely has, like, blinders on to everything else that's happened in the superhero genre. And instead of making a new commentary on the genre, like The Incredibles did with the family aspect, which, I mean, isn't necessarily a new comment, but let's be honest, it's the only good Fantastic Four movie to ever be released. It just feels like they picked and choose where they wanted to draw from modern superhero films. And I get it. Part of the struggle of that is the superhero genre is changing so much constantly every year. And it takes 5 years for one of these films to be made, from the planning of it to the voicing to the animation, that, you know, if you set a movie 5 years ago in 2013, okay, they started working on this right after the Avengers came out. So, what did you guys think as far as this film as a mirror? We kind of talked about this a little bit with, like, Jake, you brought up the Elastigirl saving the train versus Mr. Incredible being sued for the train. I think there's another couple of parallels, you know, with Bob being the stay-at-home dad, and then, you know, how he visits Edna, and it's two very separate interactions from movie one to movie two. Mm-hmm. He's getting a new suit versus needing help. And then, you know, there's also this dynamic between Mr. Incredible and his past with Syndrome, and then Elastigirl and the past that she couldn't make happen, and Screenslaver or Miss... Evelyn Dever. So what did you guys, with the mirroring of the two acts, was that something, or of the two films, was that something that worked for you guys, or did that take away from the excitement of the movie?
It worked for me in some ways and definitely didn't work in other ways. I think for me, what did work was just, like, seeing Elastigirl in action, because she freaking kicks butt. It was awesome, like, getting to see her do things that we had seen very similar to what Mr. Incredible did in the last movie was a lot of fun. Uh-huh. Seeing Mr. Incredible / Bob at home be a stay-at-home dad, that was fun and entertaining. And, but, like, as a whole, I was a little disappointed of, like, how much of a mirror it felt like. I understand, I understand that there's been some time between the films, but not the stories. And so I was just, like, the whole time I was like, we just did this. Like, we just did this. So I was, like, frustrated at the characters for being so ignorant of making the exact same decisions as they did in the last film. So yes,
right.
And no.
I agree. The frustration of Bob not learning from his experience of not sharing information with his wife was incredibly frustrating. But yeah, I do agree that it was super cool to see what Elastigirl could do. Her powers are much more interesting than Mr. Incredible's powers.
Yeah, so cool.
And there were also, I feel like, some almost, like, intentional homages to, like, four different superheroes and some things that she mm-hmm. was doing. Also, I couldn't help but think about the helicopter scene in the first Mission Impossible with the train and everything.
Yeah.
The mirror is fine, I guess. We even have the mirror on our villains mm-hmm. a little bit. with them having some sort of traumatic experience as a child. The odd thing is that Syndrome's negative experience was much less significant than Screenslaver's, but his scope of actions was infinitely higher than what she was trying to do. So that's kind of an odd thing.
I feel like his was trying to like make himself into a superhero because he wanted the recognition that he had never gotten. Whereas Screenslaver's is more of superheroes or the lack of attention that superheroes gave to my parents is why Screenslaver is now like, I'm going to ruin every superhero's life. Screenslaver is more like, I want to destroy the superheroes. Syndrome is more, I want to show why anybody could be a superhero.
Yeah. Different characters, yeah. Different motives. I was a little frustrated by the similarities until I realized kind of what was happening in terms of like the plot as a whole and what they were trying to say. And then I was fine with it. I think a big complaint for me is like, they're just trying to say too much. So everything that they say feels watered down.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like, I just kind of realized this. Screenslaver is basically Lex Luthor, mm-hmm. Who's not really interesting. So that's kind of why there's a problem. Lex Luthor's main motivation is that he doesn't think Superman should have powers. And that's it, mm-hmm. really. So, but that's what we have here. The other thing with Screenslaver, this is the third movie this year, I think. I'm trying to think. Ready Player One, we talked about this a little bit with The Wrinkle in Time. The third movie this year that could have really done an interesting job of critiquing modern technology and didn't go where it could have mm-hmm. with the Screenslaver idea.
Like I feel like it gets it like 75% of the way, but then just can't finish.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. It doesn't quite like what Wall-E does for making you think about consumption. This kind of had the potential to make you think about your technology use, but it completely, it's almost like they stumbled into that 75% the way that the movie ended up actually.
But
it's like that wasn't the intent at all, but it could have been, and that's frustrating.
Yeah, part of it is them sitting there like, guys, we all know technology's bad. Do we really need to say it and spell it out for you? And it's like, no, you know, I mean, get us a little bit further. Like, why is it bad? Not just like, hey, technology's bad. They're watching you.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yeah, that's kind of like we've seen that. We know.
And if they could have shown some people like a little more voluntarily joining Screenslaver instead of having goggles just slapped on them.
Yeah.
You know, something like
what's
that.
What's frustrating with Screenslaver is like kind of how you guys have been saying is the unfulfilled promise of what could have been. Like Syndrome was such an interesting character to me just because of like we knew that we started with the backstory and like you felt the emotion. We spent more time with that relationship between Syndrome and Bob, and so we kind of got to understand both perspectives, whereas this was like, Screenslaver's bad. Oh, wait, Screenslaver's this girl. Oh, okay. And that never really works. I appreciate the message of why Screenslaver's bad. I think it's a good message for kids to hear of like, don't be a slave to your screens and don't get stuck watching Screensavers. Heyo. but it's also super weird to have a company that's owned by Disney and Apple make a film about how big tech company might not be trustworthy and they're controlling you and watching you. And like the media has a bias against perception. Like, did anybody else feel a little weird about that?
Yeah. A little bit.
Yeah.
I didn't even think
about
it.
I was like, this is kind of weird to have this film ranting about like technology and stuff and you're owned by the biggest tech and the biggest media company.
Yeah, one that's buying Fox or trying to. Comcast is also trying to. Yeah.
Ugh.
That's a mess. Okay, so I brought up early on in this review that one of my biggest issues with this movie was the intercutting of different stories and that there were some that were far more interesting than the others. So just kind of give the example is, I feel like Jack-Jack's the best part of this movie. Elastigirl is close second. Anything involving the new superheroes or sometimes Screenslaver, like in the middle of the movie where Elastigirl finds Screenslaver, but then you know that it's not really Screenslaver because it's a pizza guy. It's like, all right, move on. We get this. Or some of the Tony stuff with Violet wasn't that interesting. There's just like all these little side things that they try and add that almost feels like they're, you know, when you get to the end of the movie, it feels like we're at the same place as where we started. So like with Violet and Tony, I think that's the guy's name that she's supposed to go on a date with. We're at the exact same place starting as we were ending the last movie. And there's things like that that are just kind of like, okay, why did we need that in there at all? Like, it takes away, and none of the new additions to the superheroes really added anything. That was just kind of like a, I feel like they visually were like, hey, it'd be cool if we had somebody that could like open up different voids, or we need somebody who's strong so that we can put somebody against Mr. Incredible on a fitness level. But there was nothing,
well,
like all these different things
the thing
didn't
is,
add up to me.
Is that coming soon to a Roku near you are straight to streaming sequels that are going to be bad that have all those
superheroes.
You mean
straight to a Disney streaming service.
Ooh,
right.
Whatever. 2019.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. No, I.
They're going to be the planes of the Incredibles.
I didn't mind the new heroes. I think that it was once again like a unnecessary like small side story that could have been a lot more than what it was, which I think is a good summary for this movie. But I appreciated that the powers that they had were like really interesting. It wasn't just like super strong, super fast. It was like, wait, these are like really different and unique. And it was cool to see these like that the Incredibles and Frozone aren't like the only people out there. You know, it's like there's this bigger world of like, quote, low tier or like lower tier heroes that look up to the Incredibles.
I really like the Hawkeye and Scarlet Witch of the Incredibles universe. Let's say it. Just throw it out there.
Yeah.
What Scarlet Witch is the most powerful.
Right.
Person,
but she's
but
used
whatever.
As a side character in almost every single film she's in.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I thought they were pretty fun. I didn't really care about, I mean, there were a couple of them. I think that Void is more, maybe the most interesting. Mm-hmm.
You mean Kristen Stewart?
With her powers.
Is that who that was?
Is that who voiced it?
No, it's Sophia Bush, but every single thing about that character, like the lip biting, the like awkwardness, I was like, they're doing Kristen Stewart. Like that's a Kristen Stewart.
It does kind of, she does kind of look like her. I didn't think about that. I thought she was really interesting.
But that's the thing is for a movie that's so personal with its superheroes, like so much of the original takes place in like, it's almost the opposite of Batman. Batman's like, who are you? I'm Batman. This is almost like, who am I? Well, I'm Bob Parr. I'm a dad. Like so much of like who these people are is tied to their superpower, but it's also who they are. Like what makes them and that superpower that they have impactful is who they are outside of that. And we don't get that with any of these characters. All we get is that superhero persona that doesn't, I mean, we get a little bit with Void of like the, she's a big Elastigirl fan, which is fun, but there's no other like personal dynamic to tie us to these characters. So I, you know, at the end of all of this, the question that's on my mind is, does this film add to the legacy of the first film and make you want more? Or is this kind of a film that gives you pause and goes, okay, yeah, maybe they've said what they need to say.
Yeah, I think it's a decent continuation of the story. I think it's fun and works. I think that it could maybe be a bridge to something really good, potentially. But I feel like this is definitely Brad Bird's thing. Like, I don't, even if it's a good idea, I'm not sure I want it from anyone else. So I don't know what his thoughts on it are, but I mean, I'd be fine with another Incredibles. I don't think a third one is ridiculous or out of the question. Especially one that maybe gives us, you know, I don't need a huge time jump, but like, you know, like 2 or 3 years, where we see kind of the evolution of a little bit of the evolution of Jack-Jack, because presumably he's not going to hold on to all of those powers as referenced in the movie.
Oh, I think that's almost the most interesting part is like what everything that everybody that we've seen so far is almost a, like one, maybe two superpowers type character. It's like, what if it's almost like Legion? Like, what if the TV show on FX? What if he has all of these powers? What if he's just this, like, how do you raise on a family level somebody who is the most powerful superhero of all time?
That would be interesting.
I mean, there's a pitch.
There's a pitch. Pixar, call me. I'm interested.
Yeah.
But at the same time, Pixar, please just get back to making original films, because your original films are incredible. Like the last three original films they've put out, Inside Out, The Good Dinosaur, and Coco, are all great films. And I just want more of that original Pixar view of the world. Like, it's such a unique view that I don't need these sequels. Like, I get it. You need to make them for the money, for the marketing side of it. But give me, like next year, their only film coming out next year is Toy Story 4. And I think even beyond that, all they have planned from what I know is sequels. So, I don't know. Just give me something new, Pixar. Goodness. So, all right, let's get to our final thoughts and ratings for The Incredibles 2. Jake, what are your final thoughts and ratings?
Yeah, final thoughts. I think my most frustrated point of this film is that it just has so much to say without really saying anything. I mean, it's commenting on technology, society, our education system, politics and politicians. Like, what is selfless good? Does that exist? Those are all really interesting things to talk about in the world that we live in today, but it never really digs deep into any of the themes it introduces, which is what the original film did so well. The original film is just that, like, it's about family. And that is such a fun idea to play with in a superhero universe. This film is like kind of like X-Men without going full X-Men. It critiques the media. I mean, it's all over the place. And also the ending of this movie is just a little too tidy for me, considering everything that just happened. Like, a lot happened. Superheroes almost destroyed the city, and it's just like, oh no, everything's fine. Superheroes are legal again. It's like, wait, no, hold on. We need to have a discussion about what just happened. What happens when you're brain controlled? and I appreciate like what it's saying about the role of women, and like, I think it's awesome to see Elastigirl do her thing. And it's cool to see like two women as the antagonist and protagonist with like the same ambition, which is executed in different ways. Like, they did a great job of showing that just because you're a strong woman doesn't make you right. It depends on what you do with that strength. Like, I think that's a great message for kids today. But with all of those complaints, I really, really liked this movie, and I'll gladly take more Incredibles. Like, it's such a fun world to play in. And Pixar is, again, on top of their game from a technical perspective. Like, we haven't talked about that much, but, like, cinematography, animation, the score, the editing is all, like, top class. Like, just absolutely perfect. The cinematography and animation is probably the best that has ever been done in an animated film so far. And so I'm just excited that they're continuing to push the medium of animation forward. I definitely agree with you, Cameron, that, like, I want more original stuff. But I'm left wanting more from Incredibles. And that's simultaneously a good and bad thing that this movie left me wanting more. But, you know, it's still a ton of fun. And so I'm excited for more. And so for me, this is like a B+, A-. The more I process it, the more I simultaneously like and dislike it. So I need to see it again. But B+, A- for me.
Yeah, I think this was a fun movie. I have a lot of similar issues to what we've talked about. But it is, as you said, Jake, perfectly a perfect technical movie. The animation, the art direction, everything, the design, it's all beautiful. The score is great. A couple things we didn't touch on. One, the great character of Edna Mode, who's
yes.
Yeah,
who's so good. Just the idea of a superhero costume designer is something that's not explored nearly enough and is absolutely fantastic.
Voiced by director Brad Bird.
Voiced wonderfully by the director Brad Bird. Yeah. He auditioned several different people and no one could do it quite like he wanted it. So he did it.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
So we didn't talk about Edna Mode, who's a great character. I think I've touched on this before in multiple podcasts, but what I think the Incredible Universe really needs is a prequel. We need like a throwback to the good old days of superheroes, being everywhere and all the time and can really kind of deal with some of the issues that led to them being outlawed in a bigger sense than the little sliver that we get at the beginning of the first film.
Mm-hmm.
So if they do Incredibles in the future, I'm there. I love it. I'm here for it. But I think a prequel would be very interesting. All that said, my rating is a Jack Jack out of Jack Jack, which I'm going to give a that's without the last two letters. If you couldn't hear it in what I was saying. And I think it's solidly a B+. As we were talking about it, I was like, I love this movie. Then I was like, no, this movie's not very good. Wait, I like this movie a lot. So I agree with Jake. Need to see it again. Kind of all over the place. But yeah, solid, good, fun time.
Yeah. This is one of those movies and reviews where I feel like I poo-pooed it a lot more than how I actually dislike it. It's a solid B for me. I mean, it's still a Pixar film that does things better than 90% of the movies that come out nowadays. I enjoyed it. I had fun. I just had problems with it. And it just ultimately doesn't live up to the legacy of Pixar and the original Incredibles. But I loved watching it visually because cinematography wise, you guys have both talked about, and art design wise, it's just incredible.
I have the big important question for you guys.
Okay.
Do you guys think that Pixar is aware of the Mrs. Incredible / Elastigirl is thick meme? Because there was a lot of Elastigirl butt in this movie. Am I the only one that noticed that? Like, am I a weirdo?
No, there was...
I definitely noticed the... Like, they make it pretty clear, like, the shape of her body.
Y'all, Elastigirl's...
This episode has gotten weird in so many different ways tonight.
I'm just saying, like, there was, no, you're, I noticed you're definitely it, right. And I was like, they have to be aware of the meme, and they're, like, playing on this.
Right, because, well...
Yeah, I would say probably
I would so. Like okay. to watch the original and then watch this one again and see if there's a difference.
So, in the original, she, like, references it herself when she, like, puts on the new Incredibles suit, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And she, like, looks at it or says... She, like, looks at herself in the mirror or says something. I can't remember exactly. But, yeah.
Well?
That's
okay,
that's
cool. I'm a weirdo. I just wanted to make sure that I was not alone. No, and apparently I am.
No, you're not alone. That's definitely... I mean, it was one of those things that was kind of like, well, that's weird to... somewhat sexualize a character in a cartoon film.
There was
just
like a lot of gratuitous like shots of her butt. Like how Batman or how Justice League was like, here's Gal Gadot's butt and Ben Affleck's face.
Yes.
Like, let's just have this unnecessary low angle. And I was like, Incredibles 2, what are you doing? Like, this is an animated character mother. And I don't want to see Elastigirl.
Someone's mother.
Yeah. So, okay, cool.
All right.
Glad we talked about that.
Let's go ahead and get into our content of the week. Jake, hit us with your content of the week.
Okay, I got a few things. So we did our hot take thing earlier, which was fun. I'm excited to do that again and come up with even hotter takes. But we made a reference to the Scoville scale, and check out Hot Ones. I know I've recommended it before, but it's a really fun YouTube channel. Hot Ones is fantastic.
Yeah. New Natalie Portman one is really good.
Dude, that last dab, like rock star status. Also, another show that I've recommended before just came out with new episodes, and you guys are going to roll your eyes. Queer Eye is back on Netflix, season 2. And you don't have to watch the whole thing, but I will say the first episode of season 2 should be required viewing of all Christians, because they do an amazing address of the church and homosexuality. And it was like really strong, really well done, convicting, powerful, emotional. I just would highly recommend that everybody watch that. And then you don't have to watch the rest. But it was very heartwarming and eye-opening. So definitely check that out. And then this is like a twofer, my last one. There's a podcast series by the New York Times called Caliphate. And it is a deep dive with a journalist who's been covering the Islamic State. And it is fascinating, you guys. I would highly recommend. If you like good investigative journalism and care at all about what's happening in the world, listen to Caliphate. It's free. It's a podcast. It's incredibly well done and very informative. And then going off of that, my last recommend, I'm sorry there are so many, is just like watch the news right now with like multiple sources. Because like we live in a crazy time right now, and regardless of your political alignment, just stuff is happening so much. So watch the news. Be informed. It's really important. It's fun to watch movies, but you also need to understand what's going on in the world. So watch journalism.
I would say read the news. Don't watch the news.
That's a good point.
There's no news worth watching.
That is a very good point. Take in real news.
Trevor, what is your content of the week?
So mine's kind of a twofer. I guess this month is the 10th anniversary of one of my favorite music albums of all time. That is an album called The 59 Sound by the New Jersey sort of punk band, The Gaslight Anthem. And they're just fantastic. It's kind of like if Bruce Springsteen was covering the Ramones. That's what I've heard them described as.
That's cool.
If you just like rock and roll music, you should check out The Gaslight Anthem. They've put out 5 albums. They kind of sort of broke up on hiatus. Moved on to other things, but their album The 59 Sound came out 10 years ago. It's fantastic. Check it out. There's also a oral history of The 59 Sound on The Ringer, written by the great Robert Mays. So just Google that, 59 Sound oral history, Robert Mays. Take a listen to that on your Google Play or your Spotify or your wherever. Listen to music. It's really great.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm going to follow in Jake's footsteps just with the hot takes thing. And, you know, just any Adam Sandler film, just go watch. especially all of his Netflix films.
Not Grown Ups 2.
No, Grown Ups 2, Ridiculous 6, Sandy Wexler, all the Netflix Adam Sandler. No, I'm just kidding. Go watch Brad Bird's first animated film. It's called Iron Giant. If you don't know what that is, be ashamed, because it's incredible and one of the best animated movies of all time. And then to kind of go off, if you enjoy listening to Craig T. Nelson's voice, one of my all-time favorite TV shows is a show called Parenthood that ran for I think like 5 or 6 seasons, ended a couple years ago, and I will never knock down a turn to recommend that, because it's a truly heartwarming just family show about a family, and it's incredible what it's able to do just with the dynamics of people, and ultimately what that show achieves and just making you feel like a part of their family is something that should be watched by a lot of people. So yeah,
a great show.
Yeah,
truly great show.
As always, I always try and, you know, hop on Twitter to catch any last minute news, and it looks like with John Lasseter being out at Disney and Pixar, Pete Docter, and who is the director of Up, Inside Out, Monsters, Inc., and Jennifer Lee, who is the director of Frozen, will be taking over the roles that John Lasseter occupied as head of Disney Animation and CCO of Pixar Animation. So that's exciting. Those are two pretty talented names to get into there.
Yeah, that's I mean, if you're going to pick two people to replace John Lasseter, those two really sum up the best of both of those studios. So good for them. That's exciting.
Yeah.
And Disney Animation has been putting out some good movies lately too.
Yeah.
It really just as good as Pixar in a lot of ways.
In some ways, maybe a lot better. Yeah. I would almost, if you look at like Moana, as much as the bad rap it gets, Frozen is actually incredibly well done. Wreck-It Ralph. But that's all we have for this week's episode. We'll be back next week with a newer episode and review of Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. If you've enjoyed listening to us, please go to iTunes, subscribe, rate, review us, and go share us with your family and friends. Let them know about our podcast so they can listen along and be part of the podcast. If you want to know more about us, you can go to our website at Popcorn Optional. We can find all of our episodes. If you want to interact with us, you can find us on Twitter at Popcorn Optional or like us on Facebook at Popcorn Optional. My name is Cameron Slanina. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at 321CamieTime. Jake, where can we find you online?
You can find me at jakebrown.tv. That is simultaneously my website and Instagram handle. Crazy. Trevor.
Ooh, that caught me off guard. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at TurboTrevor.
All right, until next time, we hope you all have a good week. Watch some movies, and in the words of the great Michael Scott, we'll be back ASAP as possible.
Bye.
Later.